Hayden, viewers, I think it's fair to say that nailing the year three wide receivers might be the critical piece to winning your fantasy football league this season. Just think about it, okay? We're about to talk about four names that have already been selected in the top two rounds at any point in their first two seasons in a fantasy football draft, and they all flopped. They all flopped. So the question is, were we wrong, or is this like the perfect post-hype opportunity to find incredible value? And there's only one person that can answer that for us. It is now our colleague over at Yahoo, Matt Harmon. How you doing, buddy?
Colleagues. That sounds good, boys. That sounds really good. Now, if we have any big disagreements, you know, knockout, drag down, you know, fights or whatever on the show, I can just go straight to HR after this. So this is really good for me. But no, I am number one, super excited to have you guys here at Yahoo. I mean, I've respected both of your guys' work for so long, and it's going to be an incredible partnership. It's already been super fun so far, and we're just getting started. But secondly, and maybe more importantly for the viewers out there, I'll admit right off the top, like, I'm still really bullish on a lot of the players in this class.
Yep.
Like, it hasn't happened for some guys. It's kind of happened and then unhappened for a few of them, as you mentioned, Josh. But, you know, going back and looking at this group for the year three charting for reception perception, man, there's still a lot of players I really want to bet on, so I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah, there's kind of like two different tiers of players. So you got some of your smaller guys, and there's like four guys that are all very similar to me. I'm trying to nitpick the exact differences between them all on their tape, and then after that, you have to, you know, acknowledge what offense they're actually playing in. But I went back, and pretty much everybody I went back to after watching them, I went to my rankings, and I just like kind of moved them up a little bit.
Yeah.
Every single one of these guys, just a little bit up.
Love all that. And I didn't even mention that outside of those four, we have two other former first round picks that we're talking about here today. So like, there's a lot of investment in these players. How we're going to do this, we're going to go name by name of how they're being drafted right now over on Yahoo, give you stats, the underlying metrics, and maybe most importantly, the eye test with a number of these guys and see how they fit in a lot of new situations. So let's kick things off with the man in this group that's going earliest. That is Malik Nabers. Fourth pick of the third round right now on Yahoo. That is wide receiver 13. Harmon, Hayden let me know right before we got started that Malik Nabers is avoiding the pup list. I mean, does this change your entire outlook, our entire outlook of Malik Nabers' season and really where we should be drafting him right now?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think we still have a long way to go with this Malik Nabers injury situation. But I mean, for God's sakes, this is the most positive day of Malik Nabers news we've had in a long, long time. So I'll take it. Yeah, I mean, honestly, he's been somebody that just because of the way the tenor and kind of the way they've talked about the injury and everything, I just really haven't even been thinking about, honestly, just haven't even really been considering. I mean, obviously, if you're doing like best ball drafts, that's one thing. But if you're looking at like traditional redraft leagues, there's just he's going to fall in an area where there are so many good wide receiver picks that I like this year that he's just been someone I'm like, all right, I'll kind of just cross him off and somebody's going to like him more than me. Now, if he's going to play, then I mean, this does change the conversation here, even if, and I think we should probably acknowledge that he might not be himself all of 2026. Like, even if he's going to be active week one and play throughout the course of the season, he might be a diminished version of himself. But if he's not a diminished version of himself, this is a guy that is very clearly not even just based on like the stats and the results so far, but reception perception, the eye test. This guy is clearly of any of this group is on the fastest track and is like right there knocking on that door of like a true tier one receiver in the NFL. And when I say that, I mean like that's like 3, 4, 5 guys at any given point that is in that first tier. And I've got some RP data to kind of talk about that and unpack that a little bit. But yeah, man, this guy is right on the precipice of graduating to that group. And unfortunately just got hurt after, you know, 4 or so games with Russell Wilson last year.
I'll say this. I think he's like the most mispriced player in fantasy right now. I was reading Jordan Ronan from the last couple weeks, and he's all of a sudden been more optimistic. He was kind of being like, hey, what the hell's going on here? And then the last couple weeks, he's like, I think he's not going to be on the pup list, like the actual pup list, like during the season. The fact that he's avoided the pup list, like the training camp pup list, is all the data that I need here. Even if he's like 85% of what he has been throughout his career, that's still like the historical averages for T. Higgins, Zay Flowers, all the third round wide receivers. And if I'm going to be, you know, taking the exception player coming off of an injury, had a little bit of a setback in the offseason, it's probably the freak athlete that's 23 years old who's been a wide receiver one, and there's no competition. The number two wide receiver for the Giants right now is Darius Slayton. Darius Slayton is not practicing right now either. So, like, I think he can go absolutely crazy. And when he's been the wide receiver one in fantasy, the Giants, from his rookie season through week four when he got hurt, they were 31st in points per game. 31st. I don't think the Giants are going to be 31st this year in scoring. And if he's going to be out there in week one, why shouldn't he be next to Devontae Smith, AJ Brown, the 2-3 turn? That's where I'm ranking him right now. And he's been going in round four. I think that this is going to correct really quick.
Just to update everyone on the timeline, towards ACL and lateral meniscus in week four, surgery was delayed a month at that point. Then he had a setback. A second surgery was needed to remove scar tissue that was restricting his rehab. But it seems like ever since that second surgery, the rehab has been going great, despite, you know, videos that we see on social media, him jogging to first base in a charity softball league. Like, everything seems to be in the right track. And Matt, what you said about he's kind of out of sight, out of mind because of who he's going around is exactly how I've interpreted it too. Like, he's going extremely early on Yahoo in comparison to other platforms, but no matter what, he was being selected around like the Garrett Wilsons, the Mecca Bukas, T. Higgins, Ladd McConkey, we're going to talk about here in a little bit, many more names. And it's just difficult for me to go into a draft room and say, well, until today, all of the feedback that we've gotten on Malik Nabers is either mysterious or negative. Whereas I can paint a really pearly picture of how great these wide receivers going around him could explode this year and like be the guy that you need in round three or round four. But now, based on this, and even if he isn't back to 100%, I have to change that tune completely. And Matt, I think that's always fun for us to do when we approach July and August, because we've been talking about these players since May and had these firm, hard stances, and now we have to change them.
Yeah, I mean, for like a different example, when we get to talking about Rome Odunze, I don't feel like I've changed my thought on that at all throughout, like since the season ended last year, like that Bears situation, because we all knew DJ Moore was going to, you know, be gone, and it pretty much nothing has changed from that. This is one where, yeah, I'm glad that what I said in June or May probably doesn't apply to what it is in August, which is great, because there's nothing worse than talking about this stuff all off season. And like you said, it's just a metronome of the entire thing. But I do kind of want to just take a step back and talk about Nabers as an individual player for a second, because I think that's really the crux of all of this, is that, yeah, like the names that you mentioned, Zay Flowers and Emeka Buka, good players. I like these players. This is a guy that is at a different level than that. Like, even Ibuka, who is a, you know, a first round receiver prospect to me, Zay Flowers, a first round receiver prospect to me, like, this was a tier higher of a prospect was Malik Nabers. And he has, and I had three guys as tier one prospects in this class, and he's the only one that, like, slam dunk, no doubt about it, the door is shut, he has been what he's supposed to be in the NFL. And I would say that he had kind of a dumber role last year than he did as a rookie. And again, it's hard, Hayden, right? Because he played almost like the entirety of his season last year, which was only a few games, was with Russell Wilson. So it was very much like the Russell Wilson offense. It's all go routes. I mean, he ran a go route on 25% of the routes I charted for him, which was his entire season, because that's what Russell Wilson does. I came out of his rookie season, and I actually had a conversation with Malik Nabers after his rookie season, talking about the detail that he takes to being an after catch player, which I think might be the thing that is most diminished with him coming back from the injury, at least to start, but we'll put a pin in that. I was like, this guy's got to have more plays in space in year two than he did in year one. He was in space on 48% of his catches in year one in reception perception. That actually fell to 33%. So it just, I think even, and obviously we're talking about a Matt Nagy offense here, which is, let's be honest, that's tough. At the same time, though, I think he can be used in some of these ways where, you know, look, we're two different galaxies of talents, but like the way they've used Rashee Rice to like get the ball in his hands in the Kansas City Chiefs offense, we're talking about him in some of those gimmick roles. Nabers is going to be a different beast. And again, just as a route runner, he is in a really small select group of players in reception perception at this point. Again, this is a truncated sample. It's not a full season sample, so keep that in mind when I say this, but over in the reception perception era, so 2014 to current, these are the only receivers that I've charted who have taken fewer than 30% of their sampled snaps in the slot and have cleared the 98th percentile in success rate versus press coverage.
Oh boy.
AJ Brown, Devontae Adams, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, 3 times. Odell Beckham, 3 times. And then now this truncated sample for Malik Nabers. So a little bit dangerous to put his name near Odell Beckham, considering how his career with the Giants went with injuries, and Beckham is currently on the roster.
Right.
But still, yeah, that's the type of talent we're talking about here.
It was kind of fascinating to see him in that role. There's like every single play was just down the field, but you can see how fast he is on those reps. And we saw in the first year where so much of it was kind of like underneath, and some of it was a little bit more static than I would want. And some like back shoulder type of stuff, but nothing like yards after the catch. Was like, he's so close to Jamar Chase, like when he's fully healthy. And Jamar Chase is like literally slot outside, underneath, over the top, over crossing over the middle. It doesn't matter. He's just the best in the league at like all that stuff. I think Malik Nabers is like this far below across the board, but I think we're talking about that level of player. And the Giants, let's be honest, they absolutely have to pepper him with targets this year, whether he's 80% of himself, 100% of himself, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, you just look around the room, like, there's nobody else out there. And like the other thing I was going to say, even if we go into this year and he misses week one, week two, you don't take zeros in your starting lineups. You throw Josh Downs in your freaking starting lineup, and then you wait for Malik Nabers. You get some points, and then you keep this thing going. Like, I think I'm glad Matt hit on this. The starting point that we're talking about when him coming back from injury is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. So as much as we like these other guys that he's been going around, like, we're hoping they become like 90% of Malik Nabers. Malik Nabers, even coming back as 90% of himself, is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL still.
So Hayden, do you think he just totally rebounds from an ADP standpoint, and now we'll just go in that cluster of Nico Collins, George Pickens, AJ Brown, Devontae Smith?
I think it'll be close. I would put him at the end of that tier, and let's just like see how the rest of this offseason goes. I will say Drake London and Nico Collins and AJ Brown are in excellent spots. Like, those guys, we're talking about very good players without the ACL. So I think it would take a lot for me to get over that hump. But I do think like he should be like ahead of Devontae Smith. Like, Devontae Smith's a really good football player, but like he has like environmental issues that will be pretty hard to overcome himself.
Yeah. Just to close this one, in that 3.5 game sample that we got last year, there might have been one snap where he kind of was given manufactured space. It was against the Washington Commanders, where he motioned from the left at the snap to the right into a stack that gives him, you know, natural space to work in. This corner is terrified, and then just with his selling from a route standpoint, creates even more separation. Like, this is why we talk about pre-snap motion and especially into stacks, because if you give that to elite players, not only do you give them, again, space immediately, then they create even more separation on top of it. And then he went after the catch. He created another 5 yards after it. And Matt, you already answered my final question, which is going to be, I know reception perception has gone back multiple years of Matt Nagy offenses. Like, what type of player and what can the utilization be like for this type of player in a Matt Nagy offense? And is there any optimism for that?
I mean, I don't have a lot of optimism for the Matt Nagy offense. No,
and Greg Roman. Shout out.
I do. By the way, I do think that matters a lot when it comes to the run game and talking about, you know, Cam Scataboo and Tyron Tracy and these guys, is that we can be honest, and Matt Nagy was a fallback plan for them. They thought Todd Monken was going to be their offensive coordinator, and then obviously he's a Cleveland head coach. So I think it pretty much is going to be, you know, Matt Nagy runs the pass game and Greg Roman runs the run game. I still don't love that, though. Like, the Chiefs pass game was the one of the least enjoyable to watch over the last couple of years. So we'll see what that looks like. But yeah, no doubt Nabers can fit in that sort of create a touch after catch, you know, create space for these guys. If there's one thing this offense does still do well, it is create horizontal space for their players. And I do kind of, I mean, I like Malachi Fields enough as like even just a, you know, kind of a power player and a little bit of a sacrificial guy. So I think he would be nice if he emerged as the second receiver here.
All right. As you guys can tell, this is going to be a long episode, but we have to do it. We got a deep dive. So buckle up, get comfortable, maybe grab some popcorn. And while you're doing that, hit subscribe. This is a whole new era for us here at Yahoo. We're super excited. Matt, we're like 90% done with the in-season schedule on top of, you know, going 4 days a week until the season starts. There's going to be quite a lot of crossover. So subscribe to this channel, and obviously subscribe to Matt's channel down below. It'll be in the description down below. Okay, let's jump to it. Ladd McConkey, the 9th pick of the 4th round on Yahoo right now. That's wide receiver 18 at this point. And that's despite finishing last year as the wide receiver 35 in half PPR points per game. Simple question, Matt. Is this the perfect scheme to for him to level up in?
I think he'd be great in any scheme, but yeah, totally. This works out for me. This is another one where I haven't really changed my opinion based on what I kind of thought going into the offseason, which is just like this to me is the most obvious bounce back candidate in the NFL this year at the wide receiver position. Because like I go back and watch Ladd McConkey last year. We know what the offensive line was. We know that Keenan Allen was soaking up the, you know, safety blanket, the binky targets there for Justin Herbert when he's playing in chaos. And by the way, like, I don't know, Keenan gets talked about like he's just complete dust. Like he can still play a little bit. He's not Pete Keenan Allen. He hadn't been Pete Keenan Allen for quite some time, but this is why receiver decline is just so tricky that sometimes it is just right off the cliff, but other guys age very gracefully and kind of plateau at some point. I think Keenan has plateaued here a little bit, obviously, but still a useful player. So it's not as if like, oh, a 50-year-old Keenan Allen came and took Ladd McConkey's lunch, as it's kind of getting painted on fantasy Twitter. But anyways, point about McConkey, like I go back and watch him. I mean, I don't really think he did anything wrong other than like his contested catch work was, that's always going to be volatile. Like some mistakes at the catch point this year, especially for a guy like him, I think that's totally excusable. But as a separator, still just as good as he was. Most critically, like where he wins as a route runner is in those big breaking routes in the intermediate area, which is that's going to be a lot of what this offense wants to do out of heavy personnel packages. He wins against man. He wins against zone. I still think he's a great vertical slot player as well. So 87th percentile in success rate versus man to zone and press coverage this year, clears all those numbers, was just as good as a rookie as well. So to me, I think he's somebody that is an obvious bounce back candidate. He's a great fit in this scheme. It's just how high do you want to take him in fantasy is the question, based on, again, a really good group of receivers that I like a lot of these picks here, but he is certainly one of them.
Yeah, I think the two biggest things were definitely the Keenan Allen, almost like in a rebounder role, like third and six, like throw it to him at the sticks and like go break a tackle was kind of the Keenan Allen role, and it was fairly effective. And then the big thing was the catchable ball rate went from 78% down to 67%. If you look at the downfield intermediate target specifically, they were just like, I mean, it was like unacceptable. And like a lot of that, Herbert was like running at the line of scrimmage, running away from guys. And like those balls had like just no chance. I will say the one thing that happened with Ladd McConkey, I thought like by himself, just isolating him, was the contested catch stuff. 57% as a rookie, 3 of 14 last year. There's some times where I thought players are kind of playing through him, and obviously at his size, that's always going to be something. But as a rookie, he was like doing like an Antonio Brown impression for a while there. Yeah. And I was like, well, if he's going to do this,
it kind of fooled us during his rookie year, because I thought at Georgia, some of the contested catch stuff was a bit hit or miss.
Right. Mm-hmm. But like Matt says, like that comes and goes. And I think that he's not going to have to be put in those situations because of the scheme. He's not going to probably run as many downfield routes because they're getting that from Quentin Johnson, but the intermediate stuff, hopefully some more quick hitters and stuff. I think that type of target is going to come back up. I'm in the fourth round. The only thing I was in the back of my mind is they sometimes will rotate all the personnel grouping stuff. Like would they ever take Ladd McConkey off the field for a couple plays for like Trey Harris stuff? That's probably overthinking things. I think he's in that same cluster as, you know, Emeka Buka, Garrett Wilson, that type of tier. I would take him over Luther Burden, but I think Ladd McConkey is still one of the better wide receivers in the league.
Yeah. You just went through all those names. I mean, I really think that this area of the draft might be the most exciting section for wide receivers. I want all of them, and really you can only take two of them at most, and that's frustrating, really frustrating. Yeah. We can just list stats of why the environment and how the environment collapsed around him. You guys talked about Justin Herbert running for his life. Apparently, Ladd McConkey ran a league-high 95 pass routes without a pass attempt coming on the play due to sacks, scrambles, and throwaways. After Joe Alt's injury, this is according to Rich Rebar, Ladd averaged 2.7 catches for 38 yards per game. Again, we know that the environment just totally collapsed this past season, but man, when I went back and watched, it's just what you said, Matt, where you can just visualize it in this offense working out so well. Like there was this play, multiple plays against the Chiefs where they weren't necessarily putting heavier bodies on the field, but they were doing condensed splits with like Darius Davis and Keenan Allen staying in and Chubb helping. But it was Quentin Johnson running for love of the game down the field, and then here comes Ladd McConkey underneath it. And both were like technically downfield routes, but it's in that cavern of space between the linebackers and in front of the safeties. And those inbreakers from Ladd are diabolical. You know, I mean, the way he cuts inside And then if it's zone, just settles in and finds space and has these little nuanced movements to stay in a string with Justin Herbert. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I don't think he's great after the catch. I think he kind of inherited a little bit of Tyler Lockett syndrome of falling down and preserving his body, but that's okay. He doesn't have to be great in everything, but man, I just think he can be the featured player that Mike McDaniel moves around and gets advantageous looks for and space for, and then he's going to maximize it even more in the system.
Tyler Lockett's actually like kind of the devil's advocate, like warning if you want to be out on Ladd McConkey this year, just because number one, that was actually my player comparison for him as a prospect, was I thought he would be Tyler Lockett. And by the way, Tyler Lockett was awesome, but you know, you mentioned the injuries, like that's one thing with Ladd. Just, I mean, he's even in his rookie season, he's like scraping himself up off the field, you know, like putting his body back together like a, you know, a doll or something after getting hit and smacked in some of these intermediate in-breaking routes, which will definitely happen in this role. And I could see a world where, you know, you mentioned Hayden, like they rotate in a Trey Harris for run blocking work just to give him like a breather. And obviously then you're going to run some routes. You're going to do play action, you know, Brennan Thompson, like some of these guys just to preserve Ladd McConkey's body. So I think that's when you're trying to break ties in favor of like an Emeka Ebuka or Ladd McConkey. Like I do think I could see like a 140 target season for Ebuka more so than McConkey. But I mean, yeah, the efficiency could be there for Ladd. And there's no question that he shares a lot of variables. I know. I mean, I said this in February, so I'm not just copying everybody else. Like there are a lot of variables here, and like the breakout season that JSN had last year, there's a lot of variables that they carry over from McConkey here as well.
Yeah, I think if he stays healthy, he's going to be a total baller. I think the snaps might be a little bit less than some of the other guys we're talking about, and maybe some of the targets, just because like they don't run three wide receiver sets like pretty much at all. I think they're 29.
But isn't that a good thing? Like, you know, the show we did with Ryan Heath, where I think the Chargers are going to be one of the teams that leans into heavier personnel, and not necessarily three tight ends, but you know, they brought in a fullback on top of it that has history here. And so if there are more tight ends on the field, isn't that a good thing for the wide receivers to get things funneled in their direction?
It's like a pro and a con. It's easier to earn a target. All the yards per route numbers are higher. Yep. Play action targets are better. And at the same time, if you lose four routes per game because they have to get Trey Harris on those, then like you aren't even on the field. So I think it comes out to a wash. I think he's properly priced. I thought he's a little bit better after the catch maybe than you thought, Josh. I think there's a lot of like kind of Olay stop start like kind of jitterbug aspect to that. I like the best days of him is like almost like the Antonio Brown for a half second. The hard part is Antonio Brown stayed healthy for so long. He was so physical. He like was able to withstand things. I think he was more powerful than Ladd McConkey and stuff. So I think Tyler Lockett is, I think, a pretty reasonable floor for him. I do think there's like maybe one level above that in terms of just like being kind of a focal point of an offense that he can hit, but he's next to all the guys that you can say that about.
All of them. I want all of them. One final note here from Reeves. Ladd McConkey's early down target share last year was basically identical to his rookie season, but his target share on third downs was 18.4%, and that was down 7% from his rookie year, and that was all Keenan Allen stuff. I mean, Keenan Allen had like a 35% or something target share on third down. So I do wonder who is getting that work, because as we saw last year, not just on third downs, but just overall, that Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle were both top 13 in yards per route run this past season. Not bad for this offense. All right,
work.
We move on to Rome Odunze, the ninth pick of the sixth round on Yahoo right now. That is wide receiver 28, and he actually finished last year, I think I did the math correctly, is wide receiver 23 in points per game. That certainly doesn't fit the narrative of him this offseason. So Matt, leaning into that, people on every single platform are certain that Luther Burden will outperform Rome Odunze. Are you?
No. I mean, I think the gap between these two guys like doesn't make any sense to me. And a lot of the, and I, by the way, I will not participate in the culture war of like, you have to hate one and love the other. All right. I like both of these players. It's unfortunately just like the ADP market right now does kind of force you to make a really hard choice on Luther Burden when he's in that group of receivers that we really, really like. And Odunze just goes so much later. And I just think a lot of the reasons to fade Rome Odunze just don't really stand up to merit to me. You know, number one, great, great player. I mean, I think he is really, he's not been perfect. I'm not going to say he's been blameless. Like he had really big problems at the catch point last year, which based on his prospect profile and even based on his rookie season were kind of shocking to me. You know, he just made a lot of mistakes there. And I do think the injury compounded that. A conversation I had with him in February of this past year where he had talked about it was less of like the physical problems coming back from the injury and like he didn't feel as much, you know, like himself and from a movement perspective. It was more about like the timing and rhythm within a very timing and rhythm detailed based offense that he kind of felt like he fell out of rhythm with the quarterback. And that was where some of those contested catch issues even got worse once he got back from the injury. So that's something that he like, you got to start there and say he needs to just be better at the catch point, period, end of story. No question about it in year three. That being said, like as from a separation standpoint, he's unbelievable. Like this guy gets open, especially against press man coverage. And there's just no question that he's the best receiver on the roster doing that. And he definitely was a little bit worse. Like I don't love to split up the numbers, you know, but I have done it a decent chunk this year for some of these guys because there is like context worth pointing out here. He was definitely better before the injury, which tracks with the production too, when he was incredibly productive to start the year. Like that's one of the things I find a little bizarre that people are like, well, Ben Johnson inherited Rome Odunze. Yeah, he inherited Rome Odunze and then proceeded to run his entire passing game through Rome Odunze in the first 8 weeks of the season before he suffered a foot fracture. So he's just such a tantalizing talent, can sink and separate in the intermediate area. And like what number one receivers are doing in the NFL right now, he's not going to get the same like Mickey Mouse touches and like creative touch stuff that Luther Burden will, because Burden's much, much better with the ball in his hands. I think objectively better in that area, but like making explosive plays, like Ben Johnson is all about making explosive plays. And Rome Odunze is not running like a bunch of nine routes either. He's not this sacrificial X receiver. He's moving around pre-snap, running as the Z receiver and running these big breaking outs and digs. That's where the most of his route tree is. And that's like the first read stuff in this offense. So, you know, again, you don't have to hate Burden to like Odunze, but Odunze goes too low. Like people are way too down on him based on his film last year when he was healthy.
I have Odunze ranked ahead of Luther Burden. I feel good about that. And I saw the same thing with Rome. This is not like some static X receiver nonsense that we're frustrated about. Like he's in motion running at full speed. He's really fast for somebody as big as he is, could tap the brakes and break either way. He's not going to be like Mr. Stop Start in terms of after the catch, like you said. That's totally fine. I think that he's got the most potential to be dunking on players versus like Luther Burden. And I thought the two biggest things were, like you said, the catch point stuff is just like has to get better, but hopefully that gets better. And then the catchable ball rate slash kind of chemistry and zone coverage, kind of all that blends together there. He was 73rd out of 79 wide receivers in catchable ball rate over the last two seasons. That comes at the sixth highest average depth of target. I think a lot of that's just because he's not going to get some of the screens. He's like that intermediate guy, but put into advantageous situations. And his numbers were actually pretty good. Wide receiver 18 in usage, wide receiver 22 in targets per game. He just has to be more efficient. And I think a lot of that is just like Caleb, Rome, got to get on the same page, make those catch the ball, you know, catch the freaking football. That would be nice. But we're talking about a top 10 pick here. I think that he's pretty well-rounded as long as he kind of makes these kind of improvements. So he's one of the guys that going into this, I had like the most questions about. And then after sitting there and watching it, I'm like, I can really see the vision where he's like multiple rounds too low. I think he can be like priced in the second or third round next year after a huge season. I still want Colson Loveland the most, but Rome Odunze is a really good player.
Yeah, not just redraft. I think Rome Odunze is an awesome dynasty buy right now because his stock might not be 100% any lower than it is right now because of all the focus on Luther Burden and Colson Loveland as second-year players. I'm with you. I mean, his body control for his size, I really think is sensational. So smooth on those easy outbreakers and post-cuts and everything. It's just like almost every single fingertip catch after the bye just went against him, you know?
Yeah.
And then over a quarter of his pass attempts in his direction over the final eight games were just purely inaccurate. This does leave me with a question, and it might be an unanswerable question. I'm going to ask it anyways. Five touchdowns over the opening four games, then the bye week, and then obviously we know about what the left foot stress fracture and plantar fasciitis and everything. But leads me to this question, Matt. Does the end of season performances matter more than the beginning when we're just talking about fantasy players at all? Because I feel like that determines where players end up going and our final, like the taste in our mouths from them. And should it? Like, should it at all?
I mean, I've seen other folks do the research on this, so like maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but I don't think there's been any correlation between like how you finish the season and like what happens next year. Certainly sometimes, like, obviously the offense is fundamentally different now that Burton and Loveland have both emerged. So I don't know that like Roma Dunze pacing to be like a top five fantasy receiver like he was last year, that was probably right. always going to take a step back once we introduced these two young and really talented players. But yeah, I do think that the way the season ends always carries way too much weight as we're projecting into the next year, when like the full body of work, especially when we're talking about a guy that did suffer a serious injury. And I don't want to just yada yada through the injury either. You know, he makes the new normal comment or yep. whatever. And like, it's just funny, you know, if he never says that, we probably are not sitting here having like that conversation at all. When like Tetero McMillan, no one talks about his foot injury and he like missed a huge chunk of the offseason with it. But yeah, man, I think that it's definitely worth investigating that part of it and the way the season ended. But, you know, still got back out there. I think still made a couple of plays in the playoffs. You know, Luther Burton didn't make any plays in the playoffs. So I do think that's just worth noting. Like, this is a really good player. Attached to a good offense. I actually think the way I've thought about this, and I'm curious if you guys feel the same way or think this makes sense. I think if you want to really bet on Caleb Williams not getting any better, like he's just what he was last year, which is not the bet that I want to make, I think that does lead you into Luther Burton a lot, because he's going to get like the easy button touches and stuff. And, you know, Roma Dunze will still continue to have this like low catchable ball rate and all this stuff, because he's just running the big boy routes. Like, he's running the harder stuff. At the same time, I also think that there's just no way that Luther Burton can have the role that he did last year. He won't be used that way. So then a lot of the kind of per route stuff is going to change and everything. So it's a really interesting discussion between these two guys. But yeah, if Williams doesn't improve at all, then yeah, you can do the creative touch gimmicky things, but that's not what this offense wants to do. And it's not the way they used their players last year.
Last note I had in the red zone, it was Colson Loveland and Roma Dunze over 20% target share. Luther Burton was at 8%. And then if you look at those targets that he got for Luther Burton, 30% of those were screens. So like, in terms of just like normal drop back, throwing the ball into the end zone, it was very rarely Luther Burton last year. Obviously, that's as a rookie. But to me, that makes sense. Roma Dunze, Colson Loveland, like, have proven players that they can dunk on you if you look at their college tape. So I do think that the upside belongs to those two guys the most. Like you said, Matt, if Caleb, you know, throws more catchable targets, like, it was just shocking how many times he just straight up missed guys.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Just on Yahoo, Luther Burton is going as the 9th pick of the 5th round, and Rome is the 10th pick of the 6th round. So again, we have over a round difference between the two. All right, next, Marvin Harrison Jr., 6th pick of the 7th round at this point as wide receiver 31. He finished last season as wide receiver 40 in points per game. Matt, I've known you for a very long time, like over a decade, maybe like 2 decades nearly at this point. It's crazy.
Yeah,
I would not call you an optimist in regards to everything. I'm just being kind here. But with receivers,
we'll unpack that later.
I'd say you typically lean on the optimistic side. So does that even apply here to Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Yeah, I will admit, like, I'm a pretty full-blown like Marvin Harrison Jr. apologist, while also admitting that he is not obviously been the player that he was supposed to be. Like, I think you can hold two opinions in your head at one time, and that he's been a disappointment relative to, he was the best prospect I think I've evaluated since Jamar Chase. He went 4th overall. His name is freaking Marvin Harrison Jr. And I think he's been a disappointment relative to those expectations. Well, he's also not as bad as what he has been painted to be. And like, some of that is his relationship with the quarterback was not, you know, with Kyler Murray, just to me, like, and I said this to Nate Tice on 301, like the very beginning of this past season, I was like, Drew Petzing, Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr., they just like all need to get away from each other. Like, they could, I actually don't think that, again,
you got your wish.
Well, now they're all away from each other, obviously, which is, we'll see how that goes. But like, I don't think that Petzing's offense was like abhorrent or offensive. And I don't think like Kyler Murray is a, you know, total clown, but they just didn't all work together. I think they will find more success away from each other for a variety of different reasons. But I think obviously Harrison's role, it's just very traditional static X receiver. And that's really like not the player that he is. I think he is still like a misunderstood player for kind of like the guy he's supposed to be. He can have like some real dunk on you X receiver moments, but like we launched a new player comparison tool on the Reception Perception site this offseason. And if you go back and look at Marvin Harrison Jr.'s rookie year when he was a little bit healthier than he was this past year, where he had just a ton of weird stuff going on, he has like three Calvin Ridley comps, you know, in his top comparables, because he's more of that like nuanced route runner and makes mistakes at the catch point, just like Calvin does at times. So yeah, I think like that's kind of the more of the player he should be. And I do think he'll be better deployed in this offense, but like flat out, people think that he can't separate or he doesn't get open. Totally disagree. Strong separator in particular areas, while there are still some areas for growth as well.
I thought last year he was stacking guys vertically more often than he did as a rookie. I thought like speed wasn't necessarily like the thing that was kind of holding him back. It was, I mean, the drops were just like,
yeah,
I mean, they were like really badly timed.
Some of the most hilariously bad drops here. I mean, the one week four against the Seahawks
terrible.
Was just like the like the most ridiculous drop of the entire football season. And by the way, I think he kind of, and he even said something like this recently where he says like, yeah, I don't even look at the positives. I only look at the negative. I'm like, there's like something to that, you know, with that whole, the way that game played out for him. Yeah. So that's something to keep in mind.
There was like some like, open, like I didn't know if the sun was in his eyes drops where like he was like standing there and like just like dropped the football. It was just a mess at the catch point with him. Once again, he's way too good to be doing that. I'm assuming that stuff's going to get better. He's going to catch the ball cleaner than that. I see it the same way. I think he does create separation. I don't think that he's like some superstar in the making. I think he's going to end up being a really nice football player. I think that you can throw him at the X receiver and survive if you want to play in like the traditional role. I do think there's more that he can do there. At the same time, career 1% screen rate for him. I'm not sure if he's like so like jitterbuggy that you have to be like throwing him the ball.
He's broken four tackles in his career according to PFF.
So
that's it.
That's the ultimate holdup, is he's going to be a better real life receiver than a fantasy player, especially when you have Trey McBride, who's a complete alien working over the middle, and like you should be throwing that guy the ball. And then now this year, now you have Jeremiah Love. So I think after doing all this, I was like, he is a nice player. Like, no doubt about it, he's a nice player. And I'm concerned by the offense. The quarterback talent is so much lower than his skill competition. Michael Wilson's a real player now. Jeremiah Love's going to get the ball. It's on Trey McBride, where I'm still coming out of this. I'm like, I wanted to like him more, but I just don't see like the gimme stuff really applying to him enough to like overcome the fact that he's been the wide receiver 40 this last season or two.
It's got to be the most times the highest ranked fantasy players in ADP for a team that is projected to win 3.5 games.
It's not going to end well. Like it's not going to end well at all.
It's not going to end well. And yet at the same time, and Josh, your accusations here about me not being an optimist are going to fly in the face of what I'm about to say. I really think like LaFleur's offense from a schematic standpoint is going to do so much good for all of these guys.
Yeah.
And I mean, just like the complete lack of motion, especially motion at the snap for these players. I mean,
never
in the car. And I like, that's fine. The Cardinals offense is just like under Petzing, which is pretty traditional, but it's pretty traditional for like what was going on in the NFL 10 years ago. And now you've got, you know, like what I think LaFleur is going to be able to do for these guys, just to blur the line between like when Marvin Harrison Jr. was an X receiver for this team the last 2 years, it's like, yeah, he was an X receiver, like outside boundary on the ball, whatever. Like that's it. But even just getting a guy like, shoot, they had Greg Dortch on the roster, like what Jimmy Horn Jr. was doing for like the Panthers with Tetero McMillan last year, where he's still the outside on ball receiver, but he's, you know, cutting across behind him and creating leverage for Tetero to break inside. Like that stuff will happen this year in this offense, which it's going to make it a cool like NFL pro watch it back on film offense. But I mean, obviously, unless Jacoby Brissett is just going to run back the tank commander stuff for last year, it's going to be tough
for a team that is projected 32nd and is favored in 0 games to open the season.
Zero.
This team has on Yahoo, a second round pick in Trey McBride, a round 2-3 turn pick in Jeremiah Love. I just mentioned that Marvin Harrison Jr. is a 7th round pick, and then Michael Wilson's an 8th round pick. That's right.
And like Michael Wilson's good. Like he's a good player.
He mogged Marvin Harrison Jr. at the end of last year. I mean, I know Marv wasn't playing, but like just in terms of production and overall, again, final taste in our mouth.
Yeah,
I think you could say that how Michael Wilson ended the season was the most impressive a Cardinals wide receiver has looked over the last 2 years.
Which honestly made me even more angry, because my whole thing, you know, with this whole situation was like, why is it always just Michael Wilson at Z and Marvin Harrison at X? Right. Like, when Michael Wilson can very again, you go look at the comps for him, it's all like T. Higgins, like X receivers and stuff like that. It's just so I think they'll use more interchangeably here, but yeah, sorry to cut you off, but God, that was
frustrating.
It was so frustrating because I like Michael Wilson, and but then you talk about like Marv, when he was in the game, he was like target mogs Michael Wilson. It just makes no sense.
Yeah. And look, I would love, just for my sanity, to have 17 games of Jacoby Brissett, but we're not going to get that. Beck's going to get starts this year. The Cardinals schedule is the Chargers, Seahawks, 49ers, Giants, Lions, Rams, Broncos, Cowboys, Seahawks, Rams, Chiefs, Commanders, and Eagles before their week 14 bye.
Sweet.
It's rough. Back.
Yeah, we're going to see Beck. And like third round rookies in the fantasy playoffs is like, it's just not going to be pretty. By the way, the history of having like three pass catchers in the top 100 is already really bad. Like, unless you have like a truly elite, like the Joe Burrow with Tyler Boyd offenses, we're not getting that. Like, multiple of these guys are going to bust at ADP. I'm really nervous about the Trey McBride stuff in round two. Like, I would not recommend that.
I wouldn't touch. Nope.
I don't think I can recommend Marv, even if I went into this. I'm like, he's a little bit better than I thought he was after sitting there and just watching him in isolation.
So here's how I've advised, like, how I'm going to handle the Marvin Harrison Jr. situation. If you can't tell, like, I'm pot committed to Marv, like
forever.
So like, if he has a great season this year, I'm going to feel like joy from that. Regardless, I don't need to sit here for the next month and on our podcasts now, guys, and tell people to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. in fantasy, and then when he doesn't do anything, like, they're pissed at me. So because that's the most likely outcome here. I think if Marv is good this year, we can all just enjoy it. It doesn't need to help our fantasy teams,
because he is going back to back in consensus rankings out there from experts with Rome Odunze. And
give me Rome.
Every time.
Easy.
The two could not be more different. And I don't know if you guys agree or disagree. I almost want to take like a mystery box and Carnell Tate above Marvin Harrison Jr. this year.
I don't know.
Give me another name.
I literally have them back to back at like the end of that tier.
Yeah.
And I'm a little worried Carnell Tate's going to get target mogged by Wandale Robinson with the cheapies, but that's for another podcast.
Just how the consensus rankings are going. It's Marv, then Carnell Tate, then Alec Pierce, DK Metcalf. And then actually brings us to our next name in Brian Thomas Jr., who's the eighth pick in the eighth round over on Yahoo. That's wide receiver 36. He finished last year, as we all know, as the wide receiver 45 in points per game. You know, one of the questions of fantasy draft season is, how are the Jags going to deploy their wide receivers? So for you, Matt, from week 10 on, after Jacoby Myers was added to this roster, where did and does Brian Thomas Jr. fit in that group?
I kind of think we do need to throw out most of, if not all, of Brian Thomas Jr.'s 2025 season due to injuries, you know? And by the way, that's just a theme with like all of these guys. With Marv, I mean, he had appendicitis,
yes,
a concussion, and then the heel injury, all of course after Kyler Murray gets benched, classic. But yeah, I mean, Rome injuries, like some of the guys we haven't even talked about yet, just tons of injuries. So it's a theme for this entire class, and why I think drafters in fantasy right now just aren't looking at these 2024 receivers when they should be. And dynasty bros like should be buying these guys, because they've just left a bad taste in everyone's mouth. And that includes Brian Thomas Jr. But I think if you want to just look at what his season was last year in isolation, there were a couple of things even in this fantastic rookie season, where we can be honest, he did go crazy in the back half when everybody else was hurt, and they were a lost team, and Mac Jones is throwing passes. That doesn't mean that like he can't produce for Trevor Lawrence, but even in this great rookie season, you could nitpick a couple of things, which primarily was like running quick routes over the middle of the field and beating zone coverage consistently. And those became like two massive issues that defined his entire second season. As a rookie, 77% success rate versus zone coverage, which was the 38th percentile mark, but for his archetype, it's not the worst thing in the world. That falls down to 69.8% this past year, which is just like a mess in terms of success rate versus zone. I think that that can get better with health. You know, he said it doesn't hurt to run anymore in OTAs, which is encouraging. So it really does come down to the role for him. And that's where I get kind of like, I can go both ways on this Brian Thomas Jr. situation, because theoretically, like, if this is a team that's running more heavy personnel, if this is a team that's going to have a receiver rotation, to me, like, the base case for what's going to happen in Jacksonville this year is going to look very similar to the Green Bay Packers, where it's a bunch of guys rotating in and out. And they still play heavy personnel and they want to run the football a decent bit. Well, the guy that ends up playing the most there is usually like Romeo Doubs, because he was the X receiver, and like BTJ should be the team's X receiver. And I think we've gotten to a point, and this is partly my fault with, because of saying sacrificial X receiver, where like people have begun to think like being an X receiver is bad. Like, no, you want to have an awesome X receiver, and BTJ theoretically could be that. Even last year, while he's having this nightmare season, still solid results as a man press beater, just more so on the vertical plane, not the stuff going over the middle of the field. But I think he can still be a really valuable player for Jacksonville in that role. And even X receivers in this offense, you know, if you like Mike Evans in 2024, if he just has Mike Evans's route tree in a Liam Cohen offense, ooh, I think that's good enough to not be like a sacrificial player, you know? So I'm actually totally comfortable drafting him in fantasy this year, because I think if somebody's going to be a big hit from this room, it's going to be BTJ, but I don't know how many universes that he is that big hit.
Yeah, you kind of are the Robert Oppenheimer of the sacrificial X wide receiver narrative.
Yeah, what have I done? Matt. I have. So, yeah, I know.
Look what happened to him, and look what happened to you. I mean, here you are.
We'll see how it goes for me.
Go ahead, Aiden.
No spoilers. I haven't seen it yet.
Dude, even I've seen Oppenheimer, and I haven't seen anything.
I'll go to the movies. It's insane. I've watched this tape. The thing with Brian Thomas is he's going to catch the ball cleaner than he did last year. I just think part of the thing was you're getting absolutely obliterated, hurt his wrist in the preseason, that caught up to him. But I don't think he's going to have the same role that he had as the rookie season, like you guys said, just because of the surrounding parts to some of the rotation that could come into play here. So last year he was the wide receiver at 37 in expected points. I think it's a good baseline. Here's the thing where I think could get better for him. I think he can still be a really good player and like outproduce that. And speaking like the Packers guys, when you said that, I know he's going to play a lot of like the Doubs role, like on the line of scrimmage. But I do think that he can have like a Christian Watson type of season if things go well. He has to get a lot better at that. He's got to play a little bit faster. So some of the notes that I had is last year he only had 8 receptions against man coverage. I think that plays in, and he was just like not himself. The year before that, like almost tripled that number, and he was winning down the football field. There were some slant wins after the catch, which we did not see at all this last season. I just get a little bit concerned that all the manufactured stuff is just like not going to go to him anymore. Under 5 air yards, he had 3.5 targets 2 years ago. This last year, that was down at 1.3. So screen rate went from 11% down to 1%. I thought he was really good in the screen manufacturer department. I'm just not sure if we're going to get that because Parker Washington.
I think Parker's getting it.
Yeah, Parker's going to get a lot of that. They do that stuff with Tootin. Brent Strange was kind of absorbing, not the exact manufactured touches, but like in that general parts of the field. Jacoby Myers can kind of do that thing. Obviously, Travis Hunter. So it's kind of the middle ground between the two seasons. I feel really good that he's going to be way better in isolation. I just don't think that the role is going to necessarily come with them. Boom, bust, wide receiver 3. Like, to me, that's like a classic fantasy archetype.
He can absolutely outperform this ADP. I mean, when you have and finish with an 18.1 ADOT over what the final 7-8 games of the season, if those hit and you run hot, then yeah, I mean, those are massive points. You're going to have massive weeks on top of it. At the same time, I firmly do believe like we have seen already the best fantasy output from Brian Thomas Jr. in the NFL. And I know we're already entering his year 3, and that's a very short time in his NFL career. But like what we saw at the end of his rookie season that forced us to draft him at the 1-2 turn, I just don't know if we're going to see that in this version of a Liam Cohen offense, because the room is so stacked and just how they utilized BTJ at the end of last year. And again, it's a small sample. We are working with small samples here. But at the same time, this is the entire supporting cast that's returning on top of actually drafting a tight end in round 2 that's going to allow them to play more heavier personnel sets. But getting back to it, Brian Thomas Jr. ranked 3rd among these receivers on the team in terms of the targets from week 10 on, 17% of his routes, 21% for Jacoby Myers, 25.5% for Parker Washington, already mentioned, an 18 ADOT, a 1.35 yards per route run. 36% of his targets in that span were 20 plus yards down the field. I just think, like, from an environmental standpoint, the crossing routes, middle of the field, that fringe on down the field but are more intermediate is such a focal point for Liam Cohen. And we discussed why, but BTJ was such like a net negative in that area mm-hmm. of the field, that going out and getting Jacoby and now the emergence of Parker Washington and also Britton Strange in that area just makes him like so much lower in that totem pole, that he's still going to have routes on this team, but I just think like he's not even close to being a funnel type player that he was and we were hoping to at this point last year.
Yeah, I think that's right. At the same time, like we just mentioned Harrison and Carnell Tate, like I would take the shot on BTJ over those guys. And I like Harrison. I think I might rather have Harrison in Dynasty just on the chance that they fall into a quarterback in next year's draft, which they probably could. But yeah, BTJ, it's tough. But at the same time, like if there's a big hit from this room, I think it will be BTJ, but I don't know that there's going to be a big hit from this room. Cause like Travis Hunter is still going to run at least like 20% of the routes, maybe more than that. You know, I just like, it's going to be very rotation heavy base, the whole deal. So we'll see.
I've been listening to the Jaguars reporters. Cause we have to, it's like the number one thing between the backfield and the receiver mix for the all of training camp. They think that Travis Hunter is going to play like infinitely more snaps at corner. And one of the reporters even thinks that CJ Williams might play more snaps than Travis Hunter. And that Travis Hunter is like only going to play a little bit of wide receiver. The more I've kind of thought about this, like, isn't the simplest answer like Jacoby Myers is like just not nearly as involved. He does some of the sacrificial stuff. We can applaud his blocking stuff. And then like, we go back to Brian Thomas, Parker Washington at one they after just, another.
I don't know. Jacoby stays there. He's like a rash, man.
Like, yeah.
I think that he's just the peak of Brian Thomas and watching Parker Washington. Parker Washington, I think, clears Jacoby Myers. I just think that the easiest stuff is going to be Jacoby just like takes a backseat, not in terms of like a bunch of playing time difference, but just like where you're dialing things up. I'm hoping that Brian Thomas gets a little bit better. And then I really liked what Parker Washington was doing and like some of the similar stuff that Jacoby Myers provides.
I think that's up to Brian Thomas Jr. though. Like if he shows the inconsistencies and the negative plays, then obviously they'll lean more in those two wide receiver sets on the steady Eddie that is Jacoby Myers. But maybe he has the opportunity to like have that role early on. And if he is consistent in it, then he does keep Jacoby off the field in those scenarios. Yeah. I mean, this is a fascinating one. Also, they go through a period of time facing outside corners like Denzel Ward, Patrick Surtain, Christian Gonzalez, DJ Turner, Quinyon Mitchell, and Derek Stingley. And we know where Brian Thomas Jr. is going to line up a lot.
Yeah, that's where he could get sacrificed. That's where the X can be sacrificial in those situations. So it's tough.
Yeah. He is still going as the first Jaguars wide receiver on every single platform and in every single ranking out there. He is very close and in the same round as Parker Washington, and then Jacoby's a round or two later, depending on where you're drafting. But yeah, I want to get this right, and I want to get the backfield right. Like, that is critical.
I think league settings really matter for these two, between Thomas and Parker Washington. Like, the roles are just so different that, you know, full PPR, half PPR, best ball, not best ball, like that type of stuff matters here.
All right, we got a few more names. We're just shy of an hour. Before you guys go any further, give us a thumbs up. Give us over 1,000 likes on this video. That would be generous and helpful. We'll give you a thank you. On top of that, hit a subscribe. Subscribe to Matt's show. It's in the link in the description down below. We have so much stuff coming up between the two of us, collaborating and not. And you should tune into it all, because we're going to give you good information. All right.
Yeah.
Speaking of good information, let's talk about Ricky Pearsall. The second pick of the 10th round on Yahoo. That's wide receiver 41. Finished last year as wide receiver 52. Regrettably, I spent all of last summer telling people to draft Ricky Pearsall. When he played, you know, he performed. There were 4 games, top 24 scoring wide receiver. He only appeared in 9. So, Matt, I'm here to ask you, should I spend the rest of this summer telling people to draft Ricky Pearsall? Because I really want to.
Josh, we're doing it again, man. we're so doing it again. God, there's a range of receivers where it's like Ricky Pearsall, Josh Downs, Jaden Reed, and I'm like, can we just that's where I almost want to go full boomer and, you know, load up on running backs and just hit those, but they all go kind of in the same range, so you got to make picks there, which is tough. But anyways, second time we've mentioned Josh Downs sneakily on the
I know I mean, you have to do it every episode. For a reason. It's a running joke
for a reason, baby. But yeah, Ricky Pearsall, I still can't believe there are people out there that swear this guy is like not a good receiver. They just like don't have eyeballs. They're in the spread. They're way too deep in the spreadsheets. Get out of the spreadsheets and watch the film. Ricky Pearsall, really good player, and was productive like when he was healthy for 5 seconds last year. He was third in the NFL in receiving yards for the first 3 weeks of the season. They can never take it away from us. I mean, Kyle Shanahan even said it. So it was going to work. Damn it, it was going to work. And that was all a while last year. My theory on this, and obviously I could be totally off on this, but like they basically had to cobble together the role that they thought Brandon Ayuk was going to play for this team by essentially having Jennings play way too much outside on ball than is conducive for his skill set, and for Ricky Pearsall to be this massive vertical route player, which he can definitely do. A strong success rate versus man numbers last year, and he wins on those big breaking routes, which is good. But I mean, I think if you go back and look at what he was doing as a rookie, he was more off the ball, more in the slot, and running
that
these
Lions like, game.
Yeah, these and even before that too, like his first game, and this film wasn't great because he was coming back from the gunshot injury, the gunshot situation. But like he was running all of these like return routes, like whip routes, like go outside, snap it back inside to give Purdy these like big chunk completions over the middle of the field. And then there just wasn't almost any of that last year because they had to make him the vertical player because the other option was Juwan Jennings, who, like, Josh, you probably run faster than Juwan Jennings at this point. I don't know. Maybe Hayden runs faster than
Juwan. He did run like a 4.76 coming out of Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken.
That would be the fastest fantasy analyst has run ever. Like, I don't care who it is.
Just quick sidebar. Roto Pat was certain over like the decade I worked with him that he could clear 5 seconds. Love you, Roto Pat, but every single time that made me jump.
That's absurd.
I could do it if it wasn't for my bad knee, but that's a separate conversation. Anyways, yeah, I think that when you just look at Ricky Pearsall, like I think he could end up really being more like just a different player at the position this year because they added Mike Evans. So like Mike Evans just being the X receiver of this offense outside on ball, it's going to allow Ricky Pearsall to do a lot of the big breaking routes, but also just get way more layups than he did last year, which was essentially none.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his like ADOT and how involved he is, like the manufacturer department, he's like closest to like Rashid Shaheed, Jordan Addison, Jameson Williams. I think that he has more lateral ability than some of those guys. And
yeah,
he's just like not put in those situations. I think that he's a near lock to have more than 5 targets per game, which is what he had last year. I mean, he's playing through that season on like 1.5 legs. It's interesting because I think he's really good at like the vertical intermediate stuff, like all like he can really tap the brakes and hit all
even
these like big breaking routes. Yes. He's done 0 after the catch in like the underneath stuff. He's broken 0 tackles according to PFF. Like we got to figure that out. Like Dude. He's too good to not be doing that. Sometimes when I watch him, like when he gets tackled, like he really gets tackled. It's kind of like the Ladd McConkey stuff. I mean, he's a tier below Ladd McConkey athletically, but it is like fascinating to see somebody who you'd think it's involved in that department, like none of it. And that's, you know, that's a Kittle thing, that's a McCaffrey thing, that's a, you can name a bunch of different reasons, but that is like the one glaring weakness in the profile so far. And I think injuries and all that type of stuff could explain some of it.
So Ricky Pearsall, you mentioned broke 0 tackles. I've been charting, you know, hundreds of receivers since 2014. These are the only guys that have like 0 broken tackles in a season that I've charted. There's going to be some names that we've already discussed and one that we will discuss in a second. Ricky Pearsall, Marvin Harrison Jr. from his rookie season, A.D. Mitchell from his rookie season, Josh Palmer, DJ Chark, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Van Jefferson, and Henry Ruggs. It's a very small group of players. And he went down on first contact on 85% of the plays I charted in his rookie season as well. Like he's just like break a tackle, Ricky Pearsall challenge is definitely. So like I would love to see him get more layups than he did last year because he didn't get any. But I don't know if he's gonna be doing much after the catch, which is weird because he's like a decent kick returner.
I think Mike Evans is such a huge win though for Ricky Pearsall in that.
Yeah, I agree.
Like it's so obvious when you're watching this 49ers team and they're somewhat healthy that Kyle loves to move Ricky around, and that's only going to be good things for us. You know, he's the one that you get in these full speed motions, these fly motions, getting him into stacks and these free releases. And if that's the case, he is one of these guys to me that you give him separation, he sustains it and can even create it at multiple levels. So as long as Mike Evans' hamstrings stay intact, I think that allows us to have Ricky Pearsall in like the best situation possible for him. I can't believe I'm so optimistic for a guy who has like 99 targets in his career so far. And less than 1,000 yards through 2 seasons. I don't want to be of this mindset of, well, he's had these fluke and crazy injuries over these last 2 years, and that's just going to sustain itself. Because I really do think when it all comes together for this 49ers team, if it ever is again, Ricky Pearsall is just going to be like a massive beneficiary for it, because Kyle is exactly the type of play caller, I think, that's going to get the most out of this styling of a player.
I like all these guys in this range. I put Ricky Pearsall a tier above all of the guys in this ADP just because I think that his ultimate upside is like he plays every single snap. You know, George Kittle, like, we'll see if he's going to play the first month of the season. Like, I don't think that's a given, given when he actually tore his Achilles. Mike Evans has been struggling to stay healthy. He's still pretty dang good football player when he's been out there, though. And then, yeah, the CMC stuff. Like, if he goes down with an injury, then we're talking about like 25, 30 touches per game going somewhere else. So I think his, like, pathway to being, like, the wide receiver 16 in scoring this year is a little bit clearer to me than a lot of the other guys that have, like, not done it yet that have flashed. And yeah, right now he seems good to go. So
just quickly in rankings of where these guys are listed, it goes Michael Wilson, Michael Pittman, Quentin Johnson, Mekhi Lemon, Ricky Pearsall, then Jacoby Myers, Jordan Addison, Wandale Robinson.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, Ricky Pearsall over all of those guys. It's just like, if you're just trying to get on base in like a best ball format, like the Michael Pittman, Jacoby Myers, you know, boring picks, like I get it, but yeah, Wandale too is in that bucket. But yeah, any Quentin Johnson is fine. But yeah, I would take Ricky Pearsall over all those guys. Yeah, his top two comparables, by the way, in the player comparison tool on the site are like two Adam Thielen seasons, which I think like ultimate up. And I know that's like white guy to white guy, but yeah, I know. Hey, that input is not in the tool.
It does make sense.
Like, yeah, like, kind of flanker slot runs isn't just a bunny hop receiver, runs big breaking routes. I think that's like the best use for him.
I agree.
Harmon, I will say we just appeared on the Ringer Fantasy Football Show for a two-parter, it turned into, and you were shouted out for that Ricky Pearsall Adam Thielen, because Heifetz said he did the drop down and went to skin color and said, oh, it's right,
Jack Besh to the current version of Cooper Kupp.
I heard that on your show today.
Okay, let's talk about Xavier Worthy. I'm not and am excited for this conversation at the same time. He's going in the 11th round on Yahoo. Simple question for you, Matt. What is Xavier Worthy and what can he be?
Yeah, so let's just be honest. I was lower than consensus on Xavier Worthy as a prospect. I was lower than consensus on Xavier Worthy coming out of his rookie year. At the same time, if I am going to do the like, hey, we got to give this guy a pass for this, that, and the other due to injuries, we have to be intellectually, you know, consistent here and say that we can give Xavier Worthy a pass for his second season because he got blasted by a teammate that is listed, and I'm going to emphasize listed, as 85 pounds heavier than him. And I'm going to go ahead and actually take the over on the 85 pounds there. So, yeah, I think that a lot of, you know, Worthy's second season was just really banged from the start, literally. But you know, it wasn't a good result on the field. Like, he really struggles to separate. He goes down on first contact all the time. He's not going to be useful against press man coverage whatsoever, which is a problem because the Chiefs' best receiver is only good against zone coverage. So that's really like these two guys just should not be on the same team together whatsoever. is a nightmare in that room because of that. But I mean, he's not a completely useless player. There are areas where he definitely wins. Like, he's good on quick out routes against man coverage. He can win there, but it's just the deep stuff is not come together for him, mostly because he's just too small.
Yeah, he's just playing out of position. Like, to me, like, what's his numbers like on the line of scrimmage? Like, just sitting there watching them, just like, he's on the line of scrimmage way too often, and he just can't get enough space to like be good in on breaking routes.
He's like the
71% snaps outside. He was on the ball, which went up from 43% to 53%.
Yeah, you felt it. You felt that. Yeah.
To me,
he should like never be on the ball. Like, he should never be on the ball. He's 165 pounds. Come on.
It's true.
To me, he's the perfect example of like, to be a good downfield receiver, you have to be more than fast, because these corners at an NFL level, just an average one right now, slow him down to their speed, and then they can just play at that. And then when the ball is a tight window target, they just play through him, and he can't come up with it. It's so fascinating to me, like, just going through this. He caught 4 of 16 20-plus yard targets this past season, 7 of 21 the year before, and was only 4 of 13 on the intermediate receptions during his rookie season as well. Like, he really is, Hayden, to go back to what you were saying, He's like a 9 yard and underneath wide receiver so far in his career. And that's kind of not how at least I thought he was going to be utilized in the NFL.
Yeah. Last year was, I'm almost willing to throw it completely out because the type that's of routes that he,
on the show,
I know, but this one, I think he maybe even stronger about because Andy Reid said that they were going to throw him a lot of crossing routes and they said they couldn't do that. They're going to throw him screens. His screen rate dropped like almost to zero this last year because they knew if he got tackled on that delicate shoulder, like he would just be out for even longer than that. And all that said, when Tyquan Thornton's your third guy, like someone's getting jammed. Like, so who is that going to be? I do, in the back of my mind, I do wonder, do we just start like closing the gap between Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy and the manufactured touches and how you're kind of utilizing them to some degree? I think that would be a smart thing, just like, you know, hedging against the entire situation that you have in Kansas City there. But he has to face more off coverage to win downfield. Like that's just kind of the reality. Or you have to get him running crossers where I think he's got a little bit better of a chance. But in order to do that, you have to, you know, make that a priority. And I think that they probably were going to do that last year to some extent. The second play of this season before he lost his shoulder was actually a run to Xavier Worthy. It's like you can kind of extrapolate maybe where this thing was going, but it's you have to really speculate here to get excited about Xavier Worthy.
Two things. One, like you get two beers in me and I would tell you that Cyrus Allen, their fifth round pick, is easily the best man coverage receiver on this team.
It's not Rashee Rice.
I mean, Rashee Rice has a 4.69 average depth of target the last three seasons, which out of 117 receivers that have run 200 or more routes.
I gotta tell you, Matt, I am drafting the shit out of Rashee Rice this year, though.
Cool. Have fun with that. I actually worry this was going to be my second point. I actually worry that if they can credibly run the ball, are they still going to do all the scammy targets to Rashee Rice? And they're going to run the ball better this year. I mean, they were the worst. He had the lowest ADOT and they were the worst run game over the last 2 years by a decent bit in terms of explosive plays. So that would be my one worry with Rashee Rice on the field. And it's like the hard part with Rice is like, yeah, it's like there's nothing wrong with Worthy, even though it's too limited of a skill set to take in the first round of the NFL draft, whatever. But like individually, he's a useful player. Rice is a useful player. But it's just like the way that them being in the same room together is just a huge problem when they don't have like George Pickens as the number one receiver or something.
Yeah. And technically, I think you could argue that Travis Kelce is also occupying kind of the same area.
There's another role cater. You can't role cater to three guys.
Correct.
But what if Kelce's not involved in the offense? Like that's what I'm saying. Like if Rice scales back a little bit, Kenneth Walker stuff's working, and then all of a sudden, like Kelce, like that's where like you can picture like Xavier Worthy being a boom bust flex option wide receiver three, which he has not done for a very long part. I think like you can squint and see how things are kind of falling into place for him, but I think anything beyond that, like he hasn't shown that he's good enough to belong in that tier.
Yeah, and look, the one offseason move that this team made in offense was to add Ken Walker, and hopefully that changes the math for them just in terms of coverages. At the same time, you know, the quarterback needs to hit those downfield passes for that to work. Nick Ercolano posted today that in games where Rashee Rice has played, Xavier Worthy has averaged 2.7 catches per game.
Not great.
You know, and then just overall in his career, he has three games of reaching 80 yards receiving over 34 appearances. So, yeah, I mean, maybe Ken Walker is how this whole thing is going to change. But if it does change, like as much as I think Rashee Rice is a linear skill set player, I still think that linear skill set is better than what Xavier Worthy's linear skill set is. But maybe I'm going to agree with that.
No, I agree. I agree with that.
Okay. Moving on. Jalen Coker. You texted me. We got to talk about him. 16th round. You have loved Jalen Coker for multiple seasons since he's entered the NFL and since you got a taste in preseason and everything like that. Why have you been so on board with Jalen Coker, whereas it even took the Panthers a while to fit him in the starting lineup? I know we're not going to sit here and advocate for him to be drafted on Yahoo, for example, because he's going in the 16th round. But just overall, do you think the public has the correct perception of what Jalen Coker's talents are?
No, guy's a stud. Like he's a great receiver. And the only reason the Panthers took forever to do it is one, a little out of shape at times. You know, you hear the whispers about that. He needed to get his body right. That's okay. Coming from Holy Cross, all right? They don't have the most, you know, advanced.
And not Big Sam.
Speak for yourself. But, you know, I mean, for Jalen Coker, he's getting an NFL weight room, whatever. He's got his body right. His nutrition, you know, that's fine. But, like, skill set wise, this is the archetype of receivers that are smoking in the NFL right now. Big body, not as he's not like, I know he's listed as 6'3", like 215 pounds. He's a little bit lighter than that. He's actually built more like Chris Godwin. And that's kind of the type of player that I think he is, like Jacoby Myers is, like Chris Godwin type. He can be a power slot, but can win outside big breaking routes. He's much better against press man coverage than you would think for somebody that is a UDFA that I'm saying is like Jacoby Myers. Myers also a good route runner in those areas as well. So, yeah, I think he's just a really, really good player. They got an absolute steal. And I think it's actually I'm not going to sit here and like advocate for the Panthers offense. I know everybody's first retort is the quarterback, and I get that. But these reports about McMillan playing more in the slot and everything, I think are legit because one, he almost can't play fewer snaps in the slot than he did last
15% last year.
Yeah, it was 107th or 101st out of 117 receivers with 200 plus routes last year. So yeah, he's towards the bottom. He's not quite in the George Pickens, Rashad Bateman zone, but like he's pretty much just an X. That's going to change this year. A big part of that is because Coker can actually play on the outside, like,
yep,
watch him late in the season, like
Rams we'll
line up against man coverage as an X receiver Rams and stack game. Big oh the Rams game big wins on go routes, and they draft Chris Brazel, who's just like the perfect sacrificial receiver, at least to start, like get him on the Alec Pierce path where he's just clearing space earlier and then see what he can be by, you know, year four or whatever. And, you know, Leggett's going to do his thing every now and again, maybe. But I think they're one of these teams that actually could go against the trend because they have these big bodied receivers and be more spread. Now, I wish they didn't have two backup offensive tackles necessarily. But yeah, that's a part of the issue there. But yeah, I think they could be one of these teams that go against the trend, spread things out, get these three receivers on the field a lot. And I think Coker is going to get a lot more targets than people think.
I think the fact that Coker can win on the outside is like the reason why T-Mac's going to go in the slot this year. I mean, it's like perfect. Perfectly timed for Coker to be breaking out as they drafted Teterow. I thought his film was pretty legit. He's one of these interesting guys where his catch radius is pretty big. And then you're like, he's not like blowing by guys like with like straight line speed. But then like you go look, he had a 42.5-inch vertical, which is absurd.
Yeah.
So he's got this like nice catch radius working over the middle. I think Jacoby Myers is an excellent comp there. Just like to remind folks, 9 for 134 in a touchdown in the playoff game. He played 88%. Of the snaps there for a lot of his career. He was kind of in that 66% snap rate in those games. He averaged 9.5 half PPR points, which would have been like wide receiver 34. There's no way he's not playing 85, 90, 95% of the snaps this year. Yeah. Like they have to do that. The other two guys, Brazel and Leggett, those guys will rotate as the wide receiver three. And right. I think the best of the Bryce stuff is the spread them out stuff. Like that's how I would orchestrate this thing. If you can't block him up, get the ball out quickly, let Bryce throw these huge lollipops towards the sideline, like right as the ball is snapped. And like, I think Coker can come down with some of those. And obviously Teterow can too. So I see how the offense is kind of coming together here. I think that Coker should be drafted in redraft leagues. I think there's enough here. Okay. And if T-Mac did go down with an injury, I think he's skilled enough that he would be an every week starter because just the rest of the offense, like those guys are just like not target earners. So I think that he's like a good like handcuff in redraft. And then in best ball, I do think that he's good enough to like have random spike weeks.
And new play caller here in Brad Aidzik, and Hayden, you and I have talked about this at length this summer. This team, despite having the same coaching staff, has still struggled to start seasons of how to build a correct passing attack. And I think from the jump this year, they're finally going to attack down the field. Again, people have their thoughts on Bryce Young, but if you look at the underlying numbers, he is one of the more efficient downfield throwers in the league. And you see that in that Rams game. Like a lot of those were really nice throws. And I think they're going to lean into that from the start with these bigger bodies that they have. And T-Mac can do that. And Jalen Coker can definitely do that. And like he was going to be in three wide receiver sets to start last year. And then as soon as they trade away Adam Thielen, he gets injured in training camp. And then, you know, things have gotten better as the wide receiver room.
Hunter Renfrow was their slot receiver. Correct. And like, no disrespect to Hunter Renfrow, made a big time comeback, but like that is the slot only of slot onlys of all time. Correct. So yeah.
And then when Hunter's in there, you know, then you can't move T-Mac in the slot because Hunter Renfrow can't play anywhere else. So like, I bet T-Mac plays like 30% of the snaps in the slot. So it's doubling what he did last year. Yeah. Let's not go crazy and start calling him a big slot out there and just overemphasizes
Drake
stuff.
London. Like Drake London. Yeah. Yes. I mean, like Drake London, they were the same family of receivers. I think London's a little bit better and has a higher ceiling, like the better as a prospect. But yeah, like London was 39% snaps in the slot in 2024 on passing plays. That's good enough.
And when they're in the slot, the ball is basically going to them.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Jalen Coker. Really fun player. Really good player. Make some difficult grabs and then make some highlight reel ones on the outside. Okay, let's end this episode with some three quick hitters. Just because for us sickos that have been drafting best ball all summer, these guys are kind of relevant. First is Adonai Mitchell. Matt, chances that he's the second highest scoring wide receiver on the Jets this season?
Even? I mean, I think it's like even between him and...
pretty good.
He is the only receiver in the NFL... James Coe jokes about this. So like every receiver, I'm like, yeah, he could be better off the ball. He could be better in the slot. He's like the only receiver I never want to see him in the slot. He should be what George Pickens was last year. Like the farthest away from the ball, you're doing your own thing. Cause I know he gets kind of painted as this great separator, super overrated as a separator because he can't beat zone coverage. But like these one-on-one situations on like just basically four routes, slant,
body
curl,
control,
out, you know, nine. He can be good on those routes, but that's about it.
No more notes than that for me. That's it.
Hayden, is there so a difference simplistic to you, though, in your mindset with him where, you know, at the start of the summer on Underdog, we were drafting him in the 18th round, and now because we hate all those picks basically from the 14th round to the 18th round, now he's a 15th round pick. Like, is there any change in your wavelength on that?
No, I think that's fair. Like, that's where I would be ranking him. I think that Omar Cooper, are they going to trust him in two wide receiver sets? Because I think they are going to use two wide receiver sets a lot because they have, you know, Mason Taylor as somebody. Whoever's going to be out there in two wide receiver sets is going to be the one that outscores the one that's not in them. So is Omar Cooper going to push Adonai Mitchell not in three wide receivers? It's the two wide receiver set stuff. And like, we'll see. Omar Cooper is kind of like, I think probably best in the slot, did play some flanker. Like he's kind of in between. And I think it's just up to him just like to push Adonai Mitchell and best ball. I'm sure Mitchell will have a couple 40-yard touchdowns year, but the volume's not going to be there consistently, obviously.
Matt, I don't even know if you charted this guy, but I have to ask because this is the bleakest wide receiver room in the NFL. What should our thoughts be on Malik Washington?
Oh, God.
I haven't charted Malik Washington yet, but I did like him as a prospect. No, it's okay. I've done a couple games. I don't have a full profile up on him yet because he will be on the site because I did like him as a prospect and I'm just curious. But for the most part, I think he's like been a creative touch guy who can win against zone coverage at times, but I don't think there's like a high ceiling here. But again, did like him as a prospect. He showed he could beat man coverage at UVA, so that was exciting. And I think he should be better with the ball in his hands than he's been so far. So I do like Malik Washington. I'm holding out like a little bit of hope for him, but I mean, my God, the Dolphins just
right. I mean,
what a disaster.
That's why I asked, because of what this wide receiver room is at this point. And like, other than Chris Bell, is he the most exciting name from that group?
Definitely.
Like, I have found myself literally getting to drafts and end of best ball leagues and saying, I don't want to draft any of these guys. Why not just take a shot on Malik Washington instead of Jalen Tolbert and Tutu Atwell, you know?
Yeah, never take Tutu Atwell or Jalen Tolbert. Like, come on.
It's Greg Dulcich for me. You guys can have all receivers. Yeah.
Someone I was taking in that range, Matt, and I mean, this guy might have climbed the most in the last month than any other player, is Ryan Flournoy of the Dallas Cowboys. He's a very fun player.
Yeah.
He has climbed from round 18 up to the middle of the 14th round. Matt, if this was, I don't know, the 2011 NFL season, I think we could really get excited about Ryan Flournoy as like a slot type player. I just fear, and I know that he really won't have any fantasy relevance unless one of these Cowboys wide receivers are sidelined for a long period of time. But as soon as he is, he will headline the waiver wire column or video for every single person out there.
No. Yeah. Name to know because of that. And dynasty wise is a good, you know, I stuck him at the end of my benches all last year. Cause you know, shout out, I hate to give producer Colin any credit, but I'm going to give him credit here that he was on me all last year. Like, you got to chart Ryan Flournoy. The guy's really good. And I was like, Colin, he's a Cowboys fan. I was like, I'm not charting Ryan Flournoy. And then Nate said to do it. So I was like, all right, I'll listen to Nate. so I did. And like, he's legit. Flournoy is legit good. Like, he's a legitimately good player, can beat man coverage, can sink and win over the middle of the field. I actually think his presence as a third receiver, sometimes like what these third receivers are and what they do to the top two guys for fantasy for us is definitely more important than what they are in their own right. Even though I think Flannoy is a legit good player and he would be awesome if either of these two guys weren't on the team. But you got to remember, like last year, CeeDee Lamb opened up the season as the Z receiver, not as the slot receiver, because their third receiver was the aforementioned Jalen Tolbert and Kevontae Turpin, who, you know, is a tiny like kick returner. Now that Flournoy has emerged, I actually think that kicks Lamb back into the slot more, because Flournoy can win play against the outside man coverage as a Z receiver.
I totally agree. He was part of our wide receiver sleepers just for that very reason. Like when Lamb was out, he saw more of the slot stuff. But then at the same time, you saw him on the outside in two wide receiver set looks, and he actually held his own as an outside wide receiver. Like Flournoy,
when did you say he was like back in the 18th round? Was that?
I think at the start of the summer, he was like a 17th or 18th round pick.
Yeah, dude. Literally, the last video I posted on my YouTube channel was like, Ryan Flournoy is a good player. Like, peace out. I'm going to Portugal for, you know, 2 weeks, and I come back, and he's like a 14th round.
He's a 14th round pick. Yes. Yes. That's what happens. Here? That's what happens. Hayden, any closing thoughts here?
I had a really good tier of receivers to be buying low on, just for injuries, just across the board. I think all these guys have upside. I think the Ricky Pearsall shot is really good one to take later on. And then I think that you can swing. I would say like Roma Dunze is a really good swing at where he's being drafted. And then I think the Malik Nabers stuff, if you're drafting for today, I think his ADP is going to go up. But the PUP stuff is a really big deal.
Yeah, Rome is the guy for me that he's the one I want most out of this group at cost. I agree with Nabers and McConkie too. One other name just to note, like I think Jalen McMillan took some nice steps at the end of last year against man coverage as a vertical player, and at least can be like their ex receiver while Ted Hurst gets up to speed coming up from Georgia State. So that's useful for the Emeka Ibuka bags as well. But we'll have to see if Keon Coleman can make the video next year. But we'll see.
No. The answer is
I don't like his odds.
I do not like his odds. All right. That's going to do it for us. This is the first episode of our Yahoo era. We have 4 episodes per week until the season kicks off. At least 4 episodes per week. Who knows? We might go crazy. So hit subscribe. Join us here. We're so excited to be a part of this amazing team that Matt has now been a part of for years and years and years and has helped build. He was a major reason why we wanted to join this Yahoo crew. And if you're new to our channel, we have plenty of other videos already on the channel from earlier in the summer. I mean, sleepers. We have Ron Stewart's favorite picks. 5 running backs who went in touch with a 10-foot pole. I mean, we've got tons of stuff out there. So go and check it all out. Go and watch another video. And we'll be back here tomorrow with another one. Matt, thanks so much. Anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. You plugged the YouTube channel several times. Definitely check that out. And receptionperception.com. I got profiles on all these guys. The new player comparison tool where, you know, like I said, it's fun. You can get lost on that thing, man, just playing around a little bit. So I think people will enjoy it.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Up the Villa. We'll talk to you guys soon. See ya.